Scott Laughlin, Kevin Bessler, and on the line, Congressman Darren LaHood. Morning, Congressman.
Hey, good morning, Scott and Kevin.
Hey, you know, I got to apologize. So I got smacked in the face twice last week. We were talking about you. I don't know if your ears are ringing or not, but I keep referring to you as your dad, Ray LaHood. Forgive me. It takes a while. I'm an old man, and it just takes a while.
That's all right. You're not the only one.
Do you get that from other congressmen? I remember your dad. Then they start calling.
No, but it's a real compliment when someone will come up and said, I knew your brother, so that's a compliment to my dad. So.
Yeah, very well. All right, well, let's talk about something. You know, Wall Street reacting negatively a couple of days ago, positively yesterday. You came out right away. I believe it was on the day that they announced the tariffs here, and you didn't like it. I think you felt like a lot of people on Wall Street felt. What was your problem with tariffs?
Well, I think if we get into a trade war, which tariffs will do that, that's not good for our farmers. It's not good for our manufacturers like John Deere and Caterpillar and ADM that send a lot of stuff around the world. And so when you put on tariffs, and you do it in a way that is kind of a blanket tariff approach, there's going to be retaliation. And the low-hanging fruit for retaliation, particularly by the Chinese, will be soybeans, it'll be corn, it'll be ethanol. And that's what worries me, Scott. I'm all for going after bad actors, and particularly the Chinese and specific industries. But kind of the blanket approach that the administration originally took with tariffs on steel and aluminum, it's going to cause you know, price inflation on building more Caterpillar tractors or John Deere equipment. And again, I'm worried about trade retaliation. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, you know, this administration has kind of a protectionist wing to it, and I don't think that's good for our long-term economy, particularly with an economy that's doing pretty well right now, and we're headed into a great 2018. And I would hate to see us shoot ourselves in the foot by pulling out of NAFTA or putting on tariffs that are going to cause retaliatory action. Remember, when President Bush did this back in 2002, we lost about 26,000 jobs in manufacturing, and I just don't think anybody wins with a trade war, and pulling out of NAFTA or putting on tariffs is going to cause us to have our commodity prices lose their value. And right now, the ag economy is very, very marginal, so I have concerns.
Well, other people in his administration had concerns, too, and some of them are gone. And now we're seeing, well, we saw what happened yesterday. The Dow went up 669 points, and one of the reasons was signs that Washington and Beijing are open to negotiating on trade. What are you hearing?
Well, that's good news, and if this is all a negotiating ploy to get a better deal, I'm all for that, Scott. So if that's the strategy, but you know, the longer we go down this road of, again, talking about withdrawing from NAFTA and doing these other things, if this gets the Chinese to the table and we're able to negotiate a better deal with them or better deals, that's great, and I think you saw a little of that yesterday, but I get concerned. You know, the president's trade ambassador, Bob Lighthizer, you know, he's an avid protectionist. I look at Wilbur Ross, the Secretary of Commerce. You know, he comes from the steel industry. And again, we're not living in 1980. You know, we live in a global marketplace. You know, I think about, you know, 40% of the corn and soybeans grown in McLean County go somewhere else around the world. 98% of the corn that Mexico imports comes from the United States. You know, 75% of the Caterpillar equipment made in East Peoria, Illinois, goes somewhere else around the world. So we live in a global marketplace. We just got to be careful about, again, retaliation or being protectionist when we need customers all around the world. Our country only makes up about 4.5% of the world's population. While we produce the best products and grow the best products, we have to have markets. And so anyway, I get concerned when I hear some of the rhetoric coming out of the White House.
Boy, do you have a hotline with Caterpillar, because I imagine that he was proposing 25% on steel. Is that right? Mm-hmm. 10% on
aluminum?
Right.
So, yeah. And you know what I thought of that? I thought, my goodness, what kind of effect will that have on Caterpillar? They use a lot of steel.
They sure do. And that's going to affect products, right? That's going to affect the sales that they have. And again, we're competing against lots of other companies. And so, you know, that additional cost could be very, very problematic. And again, I don't think anybody wins in a trade war, and that's something that the evidence has shown in the past, Scott. And I just think we have to be careful about it. So, you know, we're going to continue to monitor it. We just sent a letter. I signed a letter, 110 of my Republican colleagues, going to the president, talking about our concerns. So we want to make sure we have a voice and work with him because, you know, ag's the number one industry in the state of Illinois. And again, about one third of the products we produce in Illinois go to Mexico or Canada, and pulling out of NAFTA or withdrawing would be devastating to our farm economy.
Well, and what are you hearing about NAFTA? I mean, he still says it was a horrible deal. What are you hearing now?
Well, I don't think it's a horrible deal, so I don't agree with that. We are going into our eighth round of negotiations with the Canadians and the Mexicans. This next round will be in Washington, D.C. when we get back for Easter. So I think there's a lot of anticipation. And we should look, Scott, at how we fix NAFTA. There are things that, for instance, there's industries that didn't exist 30 years ago when NAFTA was negotiated. We ought to fix those. We ought to have better compliance by the Mexicans and the Canadians. There are certain things we ought to work on. But I think, you know, withdrawing and saying we're going to negotiate a better deal, that's not going to happen. And I'm concerned with the current ambassador on trade and the direction we're going, but we'll find out a little bit more in 2 weeks.
All right, let me get your take on this, too. This citizenship question back in census, and this would be the first time they've asked this in 70 years, is that right? Yeah, since 1950. The Justice Department requested this question return of asking about U.S. citizenship, saying it's needed to better enforce the Voting Rights Act, but you've got people opposed to it to the asking about citizenship, saying that it could lead immigrants living in the country illegally, to even some legal immigrants, from responding out of fear, and that would leave a large population uncounted. On the surface, I know this is all new. Do you have an opinion on this?
Well, I think asking the citizens status of when you fill out the census, I don't see anything wrong with that. I haven't looked at the exact question or the language on there, but asking that question or having that included on the census, I'm not opposed to that. I don't think there's anything wrong with that in terms of making sure we have an accurate count of that.
It's been so long since I filled out a census report. They don't ask you who you are, do they? I can't remember.
I don't know that because it's only done every 10 years.
Right.
But I don't. From my understanding, I don't think there's anything wrong with doing that in making sure we have an accurate accounting of the people that live in this country and what their status is.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about the omnibus bill, and your take on it. First, let me ask you what you don't like about it, because I know you already voted on it and it passed. I was were you surprised that the president, after it passes, he said, "I'm not sure I'm going to sign this"?
Well, and full disclosure, Scott, I voted against it. So I was one of the Republicans that voted against it. My concerns were the process, Scott. You know, we had 12 hours to look at the bill that was about 2,500 pages long. And that was part of the reason was the process and how we did this. Plus, it adds $1.3 trillion to the budget, and a lot of that's money we don't have, and we're already $21 trillion in debt. So I had real concerns about that. Secondly, we didn't have any real money. It's a $1.3 trillion bill, and we had very little money for border security. It fully funded Planned Parenthood, fully funded sanctuary cities. Those were concerns to me. Now, on the other side, there were a few things that I thought were good. There's more money for opioids in there, about $6 billion. We obviously bumped up defense. You know, about $700 billion of that bill, almost half of it, was going to defense, which, you know, we ought to look at doing that. But I had real concerns about adding to the debt, particularly when we're almost $21 trillion in debt already.
Wow, that's refreshing. And you know what? And I applaud you for voting against it, because you know there are so many other Republicans that were probably feeling the same way. You know, many Republicans claim to be fiscal conservatives, yet they would have voted for something like that. I'm shocked that you voted against it, to be honest with you. Did you get any feedback from leadership?
Well, I did. I mean, I talked to leadership about it before, when, you know, they ask you how you're going to vote on these things, and I told them early on I was very undecided, and I laid out my reasons why. You know, in the end, I voted what I think is right. And obviously, everybody's got to vote their own district and what they think is right. And I'm not disparaging anybody else, because everybody's got to vote, you know, in the district they represent. But, you know, being relatively new, Scott, and having gone through 5 elections in the last 2.5 years, you know, I just, those are things that I ran on, particularly on the fiscal conservatism and adding to the debt, and I couldn't justify it on this vote.
How do you feel about spending $1.75 billion on to get the wall started?
Well, it's not for the wall. It's more for border security. I've said before, Scott, I don't agree with, I don't think the wall is the answer. However, we should spend money on border security, and that means secured fencing. That means barriers. That means drone technology. It means some of our military technology. We ought to use every bit of that to help. You know, I wish we had a lot more in this bill. The president asked for $25 billion originally, there's a little in here, but not what I think we need to secure our southern border, and that's important.
Excuse me, Congressman. The president originally said Mexico was going to pay for the wall, and we haven't heard that. We haven't heard that at all. Do you think that's not going to happen now?
It doesn't look likely at this point.
All right. And, I would like to know how much, because what would you just say, $700 billion going to defense?
Yes.
And the men and women who served this country got less than a 3% pay raise. But I think we're talking to Rodney Davis, or I can't remember who now. But they said, and that's a big increase. That's the biggest pay increase they've seen in a long time. And I'm like, well, that's a shame. That's a shame.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the military has been hollowed out over the last 8 or 9 years. And so it needed to be, you know, refunded, and we needed to give our folks in the military a raise. And there's no doubt about that. I mean, and so I think that's why the president was conflicted on whether to sign this, because he ran on getting our military back up to where it needs to be. But obviously he had concerns also with adding to the debt and some of the spending in here. But there's no doubt this will help our military, our security apparatus. Many of our missile systems and our defense systems are going to be funded, and that's needed.
Let's see here. Is there anything else that you liked about it, though?
Again, I like the opioid funding. That's a crisis that we need to deal with. So I think those two things were when I looked at whether to support or not. But again, those other issues, those were ones that I think warranted, my vote in the way that I did.
How about the president talking about opioids and dealing with the people that are responsible for bringing them into the country or distributing them? Could be responsible for many deaths, and he has thrown this out there, death penalty for these people. How do you feel about that?
I'm not sure the death penalty is warranted, a federal death penalty for that. I mean, I think we ought to look at strengthening our criminal laws on that, but I'm not sure the death penalty is what you need for that. But I think all options should be on the table in terms of deterrence and what we need to do to go after these folks that are engaging in the sale of opioids and cheap heroin. We already have the death penalty in place for some extreme drug crimes. We ought to look at how we can enforce those a little better, but I'm not sure that's the answer to the opioid crisis.
All right. Well, you're not going to be my champion. I was going to say, if you ever had the chance to talk to the president, just lean over and say electric bleachers. That's what I'd do. Electric bleachers. Take care of them all at once. All right, Congressman, good talking to you. We'll do it again. Anything else you wanted to touch on before we let you go?
Nope, that's it. I'm going to be actually in Bloomington Normal most of today. And one of these days, Scott, I'll look forward to coming in studio with you. I need to do that, but we'll be over there most of today, meeting with some of our farmers and some folks at ISU, and so looking forward to a good day.
All right. Thanks, Congressman. Safe trips over.
Take care, Scott.